This regular assembly meeting on the city and borough of Langle, Alaska, on April 11, 2017, at 7 p.m. Pledge of allegiance this evening will be led by Assembly Member Mark Mitchell, after which Clay Hammer will give the invocation. If you please remain standing.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Bow our heads. Heavenly Father, tonight I would like to once again thank you for the blessing of this body, this assembly that has volunteered their time to serve on our behalf to conduct the business of running this community. I ask you, Lord, to bless them with wisdom, patience, and vision as we move forward through these uncertain times. We especially ask for your covering on matters concerning our water supply, union negotiations, and choosing a new city manager, Lord. In your name we ask this. Amen.
Thank you. Item 1C, ceremonial matters. Trey Atkinson from SEPA CEO is here and will give us an update.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to see you again. Thanks for having me. Give me just a second here to fire up.
Is it the power tray?
Yeah, it's probably power quality is what I'm saying. Anyway, just sound like a good opportunity. I haven't been here for a while. Any new members that aren't really familiar with SEPA? I won't waste too much time on that. Just give you a little update on the organization. Threw a couple of slides in here from the past, and then we'll kind of look at where we're at today and maybe a little vision on where we're going from here. And feel free to stop me anytime if you have questions. More than happy to answer them. All right, so just a little reminder, SEPA's your joint action agency. We survive based on you guys, and our board is populated by mayor-appointed directors. And we own two hydro projects, Swan and Tyee, 175 miles of transmission and about 14 miles of undersea cable. Times four, because there's four conductors. We've had a postage stamp rate for 6.8 cents per kilowatt hour for 19 plus years. And it's generally been less than that. We've traditionally given a rebate. And to put that in perspective, a lot of people don't realize our region actually has some of the lowest power rates in the whole state of Alaska. And our average retail rate is actually below the average retail rate in the lower 48. So we have very inexpensive power, and it's good for economic development and all that kind of good stuff. So this is a quick picture. Everybody always wants to know where the reservoir is at, where we're going, so throw it in here. That's a picture of the Swan Lake Reservoir Expansion Project. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But this picture a couple of weeks ago, we were at 28.54. Reservoir level at Swan. So Swan Lake, and I hope everybody can see these. Yellow is a little bit difficult, but that's where we're at today. We're trending down here, and this shows you various years, and I apologize for some of you folks that might have a hard time at that angle there to see that. And so this is our guide curve, this black dotted line. That's kind of what we manage the reservoir to. It's okay if we go below it occasionally. It really depends on what the forecast looks like. If we know we got some big inflows coming, then we might pull down on it a little bit harder. Here's Tyee. And we're down here, and we'll start turning the corner here. And as you can see, as soon as the snow starts coming out of the hills, you get a pretty rapid rise. And so, you know, the crystal ball here is to try to figure out the timing of the inflows. And we just did a snow survey last Friday. And probably at both the reservoirs, we have the equivalent of maybe 40 inches of rain coming out of the hills if you do the snow and calculate the moisture content in that. What's that mean for Tyee? Inch of rain is about 0.8 feet in the reservoir in general terms, and about a foot at Swan. So I thought it was kind of fun just to show a couple pictures. There's old tunnel construction at Tyee in 1983. So those of you that haven't been to Tyee, here's a couple of pictures. Tyee's not a real easy project to depict because essentially the powerhouse is right the side of a hill here, and penstock goes in 1,350 feet of steel penstock, which is this, and then it reaches this wall right here, and then it transitions into an unlined power tunnel that's 8,300 feet long. It goes up in, and then it goes into the bottom of the lake. There's Swan Lake under construction in 83, and this is kind of a fun picture. You can see the cranes and stuff to get you a little feel how big it is. That's what it looked like when it was finished, when commercial, and we'll talk a little bit more. The Swan Lake Raid basically filled this area here and allows us to pick up another 15 feet in the reservoir. This is kind of a collection of some fun photos. So when they were building these projects back in the early 80s, that's when the interconnection happened to the north and then to the south, respectively. I love these pictures here where they're laying the undersea cable. They got about floating it out there and then and dropping it in the water. And these particular lines that you guys have feeding you up here, they're actually oil-filled. And they come out of the water into marine terminals, and we've got some little shacks there that we monitor pressures to see if there's any leaks in the head tank, and then have communications from there to monitor that stuff that comes into our supervisory control and data acquisition systems. So just some fun stuff, and here's a guy doing some end splicing, and it gives you an idea of the magnitude of laying this cable. If you guys ever have a failure, it's not if, it's probably when. These things have a finite life over time. You know, it's a big deal. You got to mow up a special boat. There's only a few of them in the world. You got to typically order cable from the Pacific Rim, so lead times are extremely long. What are your risk factors up here, especially on the north end? So then, in 2009, the projects Swan and Tyee were interconnected, and this is just one of the pictures of when they were building that pool. And that interconnected the whole system from north to south, which allows power to flow both ways from both Tyee and Swan. So at times, for instance, if we have some maintenance going on at Tyee, that's helpful for you guys, because then we can bring power out of Swan, and you're not impacted. And also, to put it in perspective, Tyee's about twice the size of Swan Lake in energy capacity on that. So Tyee's a lot bigger project. So just a little bit of where we're at today. Projects are over 30 years old now. But we have been doing a lot of reinvestment in the projects. I mentioned earlier our SCADA system, the supervisory control and data acquisition. It was kind of cobbled together a bit when I got here, and so we've tried to update that, standardize equipment, and also update some of the information that we gather and monitor. We've also been working on communication upgrades, and I'll show some pictures on what we're doing with that. Kind of going to a satellite communications system and working through those challenges. Exciter and switchgear upgrades on the turbine generators out of the plants. We've got a big one planned this year at Swan. That'll be one of our bigger projects. 100 helipads on the STI this last summer. That was a long project. That had been in the works for several years before I got here and finally got it over the finish line. We still have a little work to do because, as you can see, some of these have some very difficult access just due to the terrain. So we still have to go out and do a survey of each one and figure out ladder access. So there'll be a little bit more field work. And then all the pads that were put in, the next thing you got to do is you got to cut trails to the tower so when people fly in the maintenance, they can actually get to them. This one's got a fair clear access, but many of them don't. We've got a new reactor in Wrangell, last year, two of them. And one thing we've worked on over the last couple of years is really maximizing our existing infrastructure, trying to get more bang for the buck, the low-hanging fruit, if you will. So this is what the Swan Lake Reservoir Expansion Project looks like done. So all the white stuff here is new. This new center pillar was installed. It's freestanding. There's a gate system here, 23 feet wide, and then this pillar over here was extended. And then here's the flashboard system that, as water levels get high, and if for some reason we had a large 500-year event, which frankly has never happened on record yet, then those flashboards would potentially migrate downstream if we didn't have the ability to spill the water through the existing. So this is, last year, we were starting to impound some water. If you look real closely, you can see the gates actually open in this picture. And we've got about 6.5 feet banked in the reservoir above the old spillway sill pipe. So this kind of gives you an idea of what things are going to look like as we get a little bit further. And so the old spill height was 330 feet of elevation, and the new one's 345. We'll probably try to control around 340 for the first year or two, a couple seasons, just to kind of get a good feel of it, and monitor inflows very carefully, and because we don't want to have a big rain event and trigger the flashboards. There's a little safety enhancement we also did at Swan. This is a this area out here used to not have this area protection here as much. And these guys reach over the side and pick logs out, and we had some concerns about safety there, so we did some enhancements incorporated into the dam ridge project. There's some CTAs and relays at the Wrangell switchyard, circuit switcher. We're gonna install those this year. It's one of our larger projects this year on this end. And I mentioned earlier about the satellite system that we're putting in. Our satellite provider went out of business at the end of the year, so we had to switch to a new one. Their main headquarters was in Colorado, the new company's in Paloma, California, so we're having to get rack space there, get that stuff installed, get it all turned up, repoint the satellite to a different location, to a the dish to a different satellite. So a lot of complexities there, but working through that, that should be all wrapped up hopefully here in a week or two. And we'll run that for a few months, and then we'll look at migrating. And this is the new station that'll be out at the Tyee plant. And just to put this in, it took months and months and months of special permitting to get, because it's a little bit off of our project, so we had to go through that whole permit process. And this picture up here is where the Tyee inlet is. And it's up on the side of a cliff above the lake. You can see it there in the picture. And so eventually we'll have the capability here to beam down to the weir down there and get lake level and flow information and beam it back up and get it to the plant and also inverse SCADA system. Another little project we're working on, these are Tyee turbine needle feedback assemblies. What's that mean? So here's each of the turbines out there, they're Pelton wheels, and they've got six needle valves that go down and like this, and the stem comes up. And it's real important that we can monitor where those are at and control them. These things have always been problematic, and they were always leaking oil, so we've designed a new system. We've got one prototype built. We're going to stick it in here in the next couple of weeks. We'll run it for a little while, and if we're happy with the performance, then we'll have the rest of them made and install them. So this is the Tyee Lake outlet. Don't know if probably some of you folks have flown over that before. And this is a huge pile of rocks. And to put it in perspective, it's probably 100 feet deep. So as part of the project, we're actually required to measure our spill. And if you look really closely, you can see some white right there. That's water coming out. And so we looked at this, and these are actually huge boulders down at the bottom, and they've rolled off the hill who knows when, and then kind of plugged up the outlet there. So we've been working on this project for a couple of years, and we've made pretty good progress. We flew some guys in and removed a bunch of those logs, formed up this pier, and put that in, and then we've got a measuring surface at the very top that will allow us to measure spill accurately coming out of there. And so these big boulders, as you peel away this layers of duff, we never did find the bottom. And in these big boulders, there's huge voids that go through all along the perimeter. And we were originally going to grout that closed, and so we took a different path. There's actually some foam that you can shoot in there, and it's expanding foam. And they use it for filling like old mine shafts, and it's really, really strong. You can fill these old mine shafts and drive stuff right across the top of them. It's really interesting, and it's a very low cost, easy to fly in, mob up and do it rather than doing grouting and forming and trying to sling load in grout and cement or whatever you can end up filling it with. So it's been a pretty good solution. We've been going back every year. We'll go back again this year to see what kind of spillage we're getting through as much as we can, and then try to fill the gaps. This is another one of those low-hanging fruit that we were losing water out the end. Our license allows us to capture so much with a particular elevation of the weir. So we spent some money there, but it pays big dividends or return on investments pretty quick. And that's just another picture. We're putting a safety platform up there, so if somebody goes up there to work or to work on the do weir monitoring and instrumentation and things like that, you know, if they get weathered in, they'll have a safety shelter there. And these guys are assembling a platform to put that on, and you can see the chopper over there on the helipad as well. This is an issue that's been around for a while since I put the STI in, and I don't like this here. We've found this on a number of our guy wires, and I don't like how it rests on this piece here. We haven't seen significant wear on it, but it is a significant concern. So this part here, this is called a thimble, and we're going to install that on the cable. So we're going to systematically go through the inner tie and do these a certain amount every year, and over the course of 4 or 5 years, we'll get them all changed out and eliminate that risk. Another thing we're working on, if you've been out to the Tidy Power Plant, this is the path in into our dock up here. And this area here silts in over a period of years, and then you have to dig it out, and then you got to find a place to put it, and then it'll silt in again. Right now, we're working with the Corps of Engineers to come up with a long-term solution. And unfortunately, their budget's kind of stuck in D.C. They haven't been able to move it for a year or so. But they had indicated that they would do some cost sharing with us, which would be awfully neat. We could do that. Right now, what we're proposing to do is potentially put a road along here in the tidewater section and then move it out here to a deeper water area and just move the whole dock and everything out there and just eliminate that, so we don't have to go back every 10 years, bring a dredge in and dredge it out. It's just a repetitive problem. So we brought them in as part of the process, and hopefully we can come up with a joint solution. And as far as the road to do that, we have spoils left over from the original excavation of the tunnel. So we already have material out there for that road base. So it'd be a good use of that.
Is that area, whose land is that?
So parts of that fall within our project boundary. And of course, if you get into tidewater and you run into the Corps, you got to get a Corps permit. And that's why we just kind of pulled them into that whole process to try to work through those details.
Nothing to do with the Forest Service.
I'm hoping not.
I was thinking of the rodents.
Yeah. So this is in tide water, and actually it doesn't really depict it well in this thing, but in this picture here, but this terrain over here gets pretty rugged. It goes straight up in some areas pretty quickly. So I think when we first talked to the Corps about this, they seemed pretty receptive to the concept. And it was either that, or we look at some way out here and just try to divert these, you know, sheet pile or something to keep this silt out, but that just might move the silt pile further, and you might chase your tail for years on that and spend a lot of money doing it. I think this is probably the best long-term solution if we can get it done. So that's another thing we deal with. This happened last fall. This is at Swan Lake. And this down here, that's a really, really big log. These are other logs down here. This is like the size of 3 or 4 football fields. It's a huge landslide. So all this stuff ends up in the lake. And, of course, that all migrates its way down to the new flashboard system. So we have some concerns about how to manage debris in the lake. And obviously, part of the Swan Lake raise, we were going to raise the reservoir by 15 feet. We're not logging at this time. We may go fall some of the trees back into the bank and just leave them. That's some agreement that we've got with the Forest Service that we don't have to pull the logs out. It's more expensive to pull them out. So we're going to have to deal with debris quite a bit as time goes on. We are putting a new debris room in this year as well. That's already been procured. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. We're going to do an exciter and switchgear replacement. And basically, it's these big cabinets, got a bunch of wiring and some other apparatus coming in. This equipment's already on site. We were going to put it in last year. And we decided to defer it because we had the Swan Lake project going, and we wanted to keep our machines operational to control lake level during the project. So just a couple other things. I already mentioned we're working on the debris boom. We're going to replace the marker balls on the Taiyi transmission line this year. I mentioned some work on our helipads. Obviously, every year we do a tremendous amount of line clearing. We hire and maintain 2 folks here in town for line clearing efforts. Plus, we also contract a fair amount of that out. You got 175 miles of line, so there's quite a bit to manage. We've been updating spill prevention plans and a bunch of other fundamental best practices type things. We obviously have a lot of annual T-line maintenance, and we've recently awarded that contract. We are going to do a third turbine review at Taiyi. If you're not familiar with the site, there is a hole for a third turbine there. The question remains, you know, is it how much sense does it make to do that? Is it feasible? And so we'll look at a lot of different attributes there. There's also some political asterisks besides that one as well. That would be what they would call a capacity increase. And if we go for a capacity increase of any kind, then we'll probably stimulate some lawsuits and stuff from the Mahoney project. So mentioned best practices. We also did an operations and maintenance best practices review out at Taiyi to see how we're doing our business out there and how we can do it better. And we're in the process of implementing some of that stuff right now.
Okay.
Sure.
Just one question about the third turbine at Taiyi.
Yes.
What kind of capacity increase could that result in? How much?
So we've got 2 units out there right now, depending on how you want to rate them. Call it 22 total. So you put a third turbine in, you add another 11 or 12 megawatts to that. But your bucket full of fuel is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just allow you to peak at a higher peak at certain times of the year. And there's also some other side benefits as well. Say you have a problem with one turbine, you would have a backup. But pretty spendy. I haven't got a full price on it yet, but that'll be part of the review as well. And we've done some upgrades out at the marine terminals to increase our monitoring and put new solar panels and batteries and communications and and all those interfaces. And then last year we did complete roofing and siding upgrades to the Tyee housing. So looking a little bit forward toward the future, and I hope I'm not running too long, Mr. Mayor.
You're fine.
Okay? Okay. This is a busy slide, but just want to point out a couple of things. So the red line here, that's the Swan Tyee intertie. That's the one that went in 2009 that connected everything from north down to south. The big one here is this one right here. On our whole system, we have less than 12,000 meters. And as we start looking toward the future and the investment we want to make in perhaps a new hydro project, you have to really weigh that into the picture. You know, how much is it going to impact rates? Because 12,000 meters isn't a lot for rate recovery, as you guys well know. So that's always in the back of my mind. How do we best manage that? I will say, I mean, we got the Swan Lake project done without a rate increase. I did refinance our debt, and we got some money from the state as well, as part of, pitched in part of that too. So we were able to do that without any rate increase, and I'm pretty proud of being able to do that. And if you look down at the bottom, I mentioned earlier, here's the energy output of Swan is 77,000 megawatt hours per year, and Tyee is 130,000. So it's almost twice as much. So, talking about system load forecasting,
Sorry, could you go back to that slide?
You bet.
I'm still stuck on this third turbine. So that bottom projection of total megawatt hours per year.
That won't change.
No, no, that was the third turbine?
That's the energy. The one above that, the 25 MVA, that one right there, that would potentially go up another 12 and a half, whatever you want to call it. MVA rating. So you'd be able to put out more power at a particular time, say when it got really cold, say it got 20 below zero, you could put out more power. But over the course of a year, you actually might put out less because you might get some inefficiencies that will come from having the third turbine. Maybe some additional friction loss within the penstocks. There may be some dynamics to go in the hydrology that you might lose a little.
But if it was managed properly with the other, with Swan, mm-hmm. is there potential for the system altogether to go up, basically?
You would have higher capacity, but likely the same or a little bit less energy.
Oh, okay.
But peaking is important.
Yes, okay.
Because we ran into trouble over December with peaking. And then my other concern, I'm kind of pushing this third turbine. My other concern is that if we lose a turbine, we're back on diesel. So we need to think about those things as a community. We have no pet projects that augment our power in Wrangell. Petersburg has a small one, but that's it. We have diesel. So
you talked about another hydro project. What? I mean, you said it, so there's got to be some kind of idea out there right now.
So that's coming up in a couple of slides.
Okay.
All right. I'll humor Bill. We'll get to that. It's coming really quick.
Could you maybe speak briefly to the bottom line on the Swan Lake project there and how that the Swan Raise project affected this, the 77,000 megawatt hours? Does that include the capacity that the Raise did?
Yeah, so the Swan Lake Raise potentially adds, on average, about 7,500 more megawatt hours per year. The Tyee Weir, I think we estimated that was 1,000 or 1,500. We also did a change on some piping at Tyee in the plant where they were taking some water off for cooling before it went through the turbine, and we changed a bunch of piping around and took it off after it went through the turbine, and we gained a little bit there. So that's some low-hanging fruit that was just sitting out there, and we went out and engineered it and got it done. So. Good. So system load forecasting, we'll be presenting to our board at this next coming up meeting, which is on Thursday. If you guys are in Ketchikan, stop by. We did a pretty detailed analysis this last year, and in all three member utilities participated in providing some information on their data. This is just one slide out of maybe a 100-page report or so, but it tells a story, and I know brevity, keep it kind of short here, but so. So we're down in this area right now. This dip here has more to do with the warming trend that we've seen, right? And we're talking about the forecast energy requirements for our combined member utilities. So if you look at Petersburg's actually flat or maybe declining in population and loads a little bit. You guys are coming up, and Ketchikan's kind of in the middle a little bit. On average, we think... This low expectation here is probably pretty close to what you're going to get. And, you know, and of course, this stuff was done, the analysis was done over last year and the year prior. And things are changing in the state. You know, they're forecasting 25 to 33,000 jobs lost in the next 36 months. They're seeing about 2,000 jobs lost per month for the last few months. I think Southeast is somewhat insulated from that, but we'll probably see some jobs lost. And if you look at population and loads, there's a pretty strong correlation with population. So if your population remains pretty flat and no new big industrial loads come in, we're probably sitting at about a half a megawatt load growth. So what's that mean? That means this black dotted line. And on average, our system is a little over 300. And this goes out to 2035. Now, if you get some larger, higher industrial loads and stuff that come in, that you can go up faster. And so the challenge for us is trying to figure out timing for potential new hydro projects. When do you want to make that investment to get a hydro project up, commissioned, and running? Typically about 10 years. So it's one of those. It's one of the larger challenges we have is trying to figure out the timing of that. For instance, you know, people were all giddy about building the project here 5 years ago when I got here. But if it was built today, it would be selling zero power. None.
I just was in Sitka, and they are in a fix there because they spent all that money on the Blue Lake, and now their rates are going way, way up because they have such a high cost to it. It seemed like a great idea, but you're always talking about timing projects. They missed a piece of that timing, and it's killing them. They have the debt servicing now on that, and...
You know, so I'm just really cautious on that, and I'll get into that in just a half a second on kind of selection a little bit and what that kind of looks like. And, but it's a huge challenge to time that right. You don't want to have a stranded asset out there to cost you $100 to $200 million to build if you're not getting a revenue stream off of it. So this is, I threw this in, and I'll just say right away, this is a 2014 slide, and I just grabbed it off of the load forecast report. So what this is showing you, and I really wanted to focus on, is, so this is 40 megawatts here, and this is 45, you know, it's about our system peak is right in here, okay? So as temperature, these are the months down here. And so you can see where these peaks occur. They're only in a couple of months, and it's just for a brief period of time. So currently, with our system loads and industry that we've got, we might have this issue on system capacity only a couple of times a year. And this is why sometimes you might hear us say, it's okay to burn a little diesel. So you burn diesel for a couple of days to offset this, rather than the $100 or $200 million investment. Not a bad thing. So when this starts getting up here above the line for a few months and you're burning a lot of diesel, then you go, wow, you know, we got some serious regular schedulable diesel penetration you know, and that correlates into an offset for debt service pretty fast. So, regional hydro site investigation. So this has been about a 5-year project, and just to paint you a quick picture, we've got about 50 projects, and I don't expect you to be able to see this, but all illustrating here is this is our transmission line. And stops right here. Of course, these are the two options for CAPE and then a little ending connection to Metlakatla potentially. We looked at our transmission line corridor. The yellow is 5 miles either side, and then add another 5 on top of that. And the reason why we're looking in this corridor is because transmission is really expensive. And the size of projects we're looking at, it can make them infeasible almost immediately. You know, transmission in our area is running about 2 million a mile in the rugged areas. So that's what the STI was. So you start looking at that and you go, well, okay, if I get 10 miles out, 20 million to interconnect, a small couple megawatt project, maybe not the best decision. So there were about 60 projects within that corridor, and we had $1.7 million of a grant from the state to go look at and try to increase the information available on some of those higher value sites. There's some of them you just look at and say, that's never going to be developed. You know, it might have a huge Andromeda fish run. Anadromous. There we go. Thanks. There's some of them just have some, you know, some might be in a park setting or some wild and scenic area. So, the interesting thing is when you start going and looking at all these projects, every single project's different. They all have different attributes. They all have different challenges. There's no one perfect project, and it's very difficult to compare them for that reason. So the objective was to build an electronic library for federal, state, and other utility planners and developers to take a peek at that. So we're pretty close. I met with our contractor here a couple of weeks ago, got a new plan together to get this over the finish line. We're done with all the field work. They were out in the field for maybe 3 summers and 3 seasons out there, you know, doing stuff like flying a boat into a lake, doing bathymetric studies, which is the study of the bottom contours, and then do LIDAR to check the upper contours. So say you're going, well, if I build a dam here, this is what the reservoir potential energy within the reservoir would be. So there's some things like that they had to confirm. And then we've gone as far as doing cost analysis on what it would cost to build some of these sites. And so we've got a bunch more desk work to take all that data that was collected out in the field, and we're looking at toward the end of the year, hopefully, to do a presentation to the CEPA board, and then this will be presented to Alaska Energy Authority as well, and then we'll be posted. There'll be static studies, if you will, for each of these projects. Then there'll be a dynamic model that's not populated, that folks that want to put their own numbers in and manipulate them to see if they can, how those numbers might work, if they got a different idea, then they'll be able to use it. So, moving along. Any questions?
What about going west?
Excuse me?
Towards Prince of Wales, that's not feasible? Okay. Not enough out there, or what?
Well, there's probably projects there, but you're in the water. It'll be expensive. You know, just a 1 mile interconnection to Metlakatla, I think it's at $7 million or something like that. So if you got a few miles to go, it gets the transmission is really expensive. We'd prefer to have something a little closer to our transmission that didn't require us to go in the water.
Okay.
At best, if we could do that. And then you look at some of the contours of the bottom, the stuff you got to go across. I mean, really serious stuff. Or, I mean, some of our crossings, I mean, they might go 1,200 feet. You know, so then you're dragging your line over, and there's sharp edges, and those are probably some of the higher failure points. We don't have a lot of problems with scouring so much on our cables as they do, say, up in the rail belt, up in that area. But down here, some of those pinch points, and then underwater, avalanches and stuff like that. I mean, GCI's lost their cables a couple of times up in this area. You guys are probably familiar with those events. Ours are pretty robust cables. They're pretty tough, but they can't handle it all. You had another question.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if anything out of your study jumped out at you as a really a plum.
I wish I could say that, and it kind of goes back to my other statement where they all have their little problems. And on top of that, you know, I look at the size of a project is going to be important. So, I mean, if we only need a few megawatts, you know, you don't